Sleep is a natural process, but sometimes it does take work to protect and get the best quality sleep possible.
You're listening to For the Love of Health, a podcast about delivering care and creating health, brought to you by Christiana Care. And now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everyone. I'm Megan McGurman.
And I'm Jason Tokarski. Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Health, brought to you by Christiana Care.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, about one in three adults in the United States reported not getting enough rest or sleep every day.
Also, an estimated 50 to 70 million Americans have chronic or ongoing sleep disorders.
Sleep can impact everything from mental and physical health to our social interactions. Here to talk with us about the science of sleep is Dr. Shilpa Kalta, Medical Director of the Christiana Care Sleep Wellness Center. Shilpa, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Why do people sleep?
Sleep is very important for multiple functions in our body. It gets underestimated as something that we just do when we are tired or just need to shut down, but it's actually a very active and restorative process, and we need to look at it as kind of a cornerstone to health in line with our diet and exercise. Certain things only happen in sleep, so certain hormones are released in higher quantity during sleep. One of those is growth hormone. So for kids, very important. Sleep is a key. And then certain processes like memory consolidation happen primarily in sleep. Sleep is a natural process, but sometimes it does take work to protect and get the best quality sleep possible. So we just always have to remember we need to sleep well to feel well.
And go into a little bit more of that. We've discussed a little bit there of the benefits of sleep, but what are some of the medical issues that can come up as a result of not getting enough sleep?
So not getting enough sleep can impact you in multiple ways. Immediately, you're going to feel kind of grogginess, sleepiness, irritability during the day. There's some other immediate impacts that you might not feel but are kind of happening in the background. So if you don't sleep well, you might have high blood sugars. Your blood pressure might be elevated during the day. On the other side, there's kind of more long-term effects of not getting enough sleep chronically. And so primarily, we care about kind of the cardiovascular risks that come with not enough sleep. So this can be putting at risk for stroke, heart attack, abnormal heart rhythms like atrial fibrillation, and cognitive changes over time and with age.
So you alluded earlier to the fact that it's now being seen as critical as diet and exercise. Why is it part of the conversation now? Why wasn't it always part of that conversation?
I think for a long time, we looked at sleep as just something we do when we have nothing else to do. Our body is shutting down. It's a natural process we don't have to pay attention to or focus on. And in our society, we sometimes look at sleep as a weakness, or if you are able to function on a low amount of sleep, that is kind of a badge of success or a badge of honor. And so we actually really need to change that conversation and switch it to be something you're proud of. Like if you make sure you get enough sleep, that is something to be proud of, like making sure you get up every day to exercise. So I think over time, we've realized the associations of health risks and symptoms with not getting enough sleep or poor quality sleep, that conversation is changing.
Let's talk about those badge of honor listeners, mm-hmm. the ones who sleep at midnight, up at 4, and say, I can go all day, I'm fine. Are they just built differently, or are they just kind of hiding that struggle?
So that's a hard thing for us to figure out. We know that sleep need is kind of a bell curve. So the average person needs somewhere between 7 to 9 hours of sleep. There is a group that can function at 6. There's a group that might need more, like 10 or 11. But as a society and as people, we struggle to know which group we're in. And at certain times of your life, you can handle sleep deprivation better than others.
Is there a way for somebody to know, other than, oh, I'm tired, I'm groggy, I feel like I'm not getting enough, to know what their ideal target sleep range is?
There's no easy way to know other than your own body kind of giving you the signals that you didn't get enough sleep. So you're going to find that, okay, if I slept 6 hours, this is how I feel. But if I slept 8 hours, this is how I feel. So I definitely do better with more sleep. But at younger ages, sometimes you can have less sleep and still feel okay, but those impacts of not getting enough sleep are still there. So it's safer to target 7 to 8, not necessarily meaning everybody needs that exact amount, but it's safe to kind of protect that and make that your goal, because that's going to be better for your overall health.
Do you have any advice for those who know they're in the 8-9 hour camp, but maybe have a newborn or another life change that's just not making that possible?
Yes. And so there's these unavoidable stages of life, specifically when you have newborns, young kids at home that are waking up, that we are going to be sleep deprived. And so the key is that at a younger age, if we figure out that sleep is important and learn to protect it, when we get to those stages, we know how to target it better. So if you value sleep and protect it, that's going to help you at that stage say, okay, I got my kid to bed. I have an extra hour before I usually go to sleep. And when you get faced with the choice of, do I sleep? Do I watch TV? Or do I get that chore done that I didn't have time to do earlier in the day? What do I do? And so if you've already learned to value sleep at that moment, you might be like, okay, I need to sleep because that's going to help me be more successful the next day. It's going to help me be a better parent. It's going to make me feel better overall. And so it's understanding there are times where you're not going to get enough sleep, but valuing it and being able to kind of compensate and kind of fix your schedule when you can.
Can you catch up on sleep, or is that a myth?
So to a certain degree, you can. So it does help to kind of catch up on some of that sleep. But there's been studies that have shown that not sleeping enough for a 5-day period and then catching up on that overnight does not produce the same kind of reaction times and performance that would happen if you kind of got a consistent amount of sleep over those 5 days. So it's, if you've really been in a deficit, sleeping in a little more over the weekend is going to be helpful, but it's not going to recover you completely.
So the Christiana Care Sleep Center is a fairly new area that we have available. Tell us about where that came from and what you're doing there.
The Christiana Care Sleep Wellness Center opened about a year ago. We're located in MAP 2, which is on the Newark Christiana campus. We are a comprehensive sleep center that brought sleep to one centralized location. Prior to this, we were kind of a little spread across the medical system. We had a sleep lab and we had sleep specialists in different practices. And now we brought all of it to one location. We do sleep testing at that site, provide clinical care at that site. We have a couple of us in the practice. I have a neurology background. We have a pulmonologist as part of our group and a psychologist and a PA. And so we kind of target sleep from different perspectives and try to bring the best care possible to patients. Sleep can be challenging. It's a multidisciplinary specialty, and sometimes it's challenging for the patient and provider to know where do they go to get sleep care or do they need sleep care. And so we help with figuring that out, whether it's just answering questions, help guiding patients to the right location, or seeing them ourselves in our clinic.
You've said that the sleep center is a bit of a multidisciplinary system mm-hmm. to it. How do you work with other providers throughout the Christiana Care health system to help someone get better sleep and better sleep habits?
So first we kind of figure out what's going on, do an intake, see where we can help, and then we help navigate across the system. So whether that's you need to meet with a dentist to try an oral appliance for sleep apnea, or you need to meet with a surgeon to address some of the surgical therapies for sleep apnea. Also, if you have a mood disorder like anxiety or depression, and if that's playing a strong role in your sleep, we collaborate with other providers in the network to help get you that care.
And what are some of the most frequent issues that you're facing when a new patient comes in to see you at the sleep center?
We see all sleep disorders at our center. Sleep apnea is still the main group of patients that we see, but we see other conditions that are sleep-related, like restless leg syndrome, narcolepsy, parasomnia, and insomnia.
Parasomnia being?
Parasomnia is acting things out in your sleep. So this could be in your dreams or sleepwalking or sometimes sleep eating. So there's a variety of things you can do in your sleep without necessarily knowing.
How does someone know if they should come to you?
So I tell everyone to start with their primary care doctor to review kind of good sleep habits, things in their kind of medical situation that might be affecting their sleep, whether it's their medication, their sleep habits, and also screening for certain sleep disorders like sleep apnea with a sleep study. Anybody who has a sleep disorder or are still finding that their sleep is really impacting their day-to-day functioning would probably benefit from seeing a sleep specialist.
What about someone who is just interested in better sleep? They don't think they have sleep apnea. They're not sure it's a larger issue. It's just that they generally don't sleep well. Do you have guidance for someone who's in that boat?
So there's a couple of things that I like to spread as sleep pearls for anyone who's interested in kind of improving their sleep. So one is setting a regular bedtime and wake time. It really helps your body know that this is the time for sleep, this is the time for wake. It's important to try to keep that as equal as possible on your days off versus the days you're working. If you have trouble falling asleep, kind of setting a sleep routine, a bedtime routine, is very helpful, just like we do for our kids when they're young. We need that as grown-ups as well. Another key feature is avoiding naps. So if you struggle to sleep at night, really avoiding those naps are helpful. This helps you kind of build your sleep appetite as you get to the end of the day. You think of it like eating. So if you haven't eaten for a while, you're going to be hungry. If you haven't slept for a while, you're going to be sleepy. So if you take that nap, you take away some of that sleep hunger, and then it can be hard to sleep at night. You really want to set the bed to be a place that you're primarily sleeping. You want your mind to associate the bed to sleep. And so the longer you stay awake in bed, the more your mind says, oh, it's okay to be awake in bed. And so you really want to avoid staying in bed when you are awake and only going there when you're sleepy. And the last thing, which I know many people are kind of struggling with, is avoiding screens. And this is particularly interactive screens. So when we think about these are phones and iPads. It's not just the blue light. It's the area of the brain that activates when we are looking at those sorts of screens and kind of pushing something or hitting something and then going on to the next screen. And this affects your ability to fall asleep and can actually affect your sleep quality at night as well.
What about when you're talking about devices, if you're using a device as like an e-reader, how does that factor in with the interactive, or is that still affecting that blue light and all of that?
A lot of the e-readers are good in that they're minimal light. If there's nothing else that can alert you to, like, you got a text message or there's somebody at the front door, if it's just purely a reader that's reading a book, those tend to be safe.
We've mentioned several times how sleep has become more of an important issue that people are paying more attention to. Where is the science of sleep headed in the next 5-10 years?
So it's an exciting field. I think that now that we recognize sleep is more important, this field is going to dramatically change over the next few years. We are already seeing some of these changes. So one of the areas is with testing itself. So it's becoming a little more difficult to get in-lab sleep studies, both due to cost and access. And because of this increased interest and awareness of sleep, more people are getting sleep testing. So home sleep testing is a growing field. There's current home sleep studies are already out, and there's new kind of technologies that are being developed that will continue to be developed over the next 5 to 10 years. AI is going to play a big role in sleep. So we already see some centers using AI technology to score sleep studies. This is going to be further included in the sleep world to kind of help determine what treatments might work best for certain patients or predict what patients are at risk for certain sleep disorders that may not have been identified or kind of come to the forefront before. We also see developments just in treatment. Medicines are constantly being developed for all of our main sleep disorders. One that's currently in clinical trials is an oral medication to potentially treat sleep apnea, which would be a very new thing to that field. You know, the number of times I get the question from patients when I tell them that, you know, CPAP is our recommended treatment, is there a medicine to treat it? So it's probably not going to treat all degrees of sleep apnea, but mild to moderate might be able to be treated to some degree with it. And then there is the direct-to-patient technology and devices. So we see a degree of that that's already out there with the wearables as far as tracking your sleep, monitoring your sleep, certain beds that can react to your snoring. So they adjust, lift the head of the bed up. So this is a growing field. It's going to continue to change over the next few years to allow patients and people to kind of understand their sleep better and kind of use certain treatments to improve their sleep quality.
Shilpa, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to more updates on the science of sleep.
Great. Thank you.
We'll have links to ChristianaCare's Comprehensive Sleep Wellness Center in the show notes at ChristianaCare.org.
And while you're there, you can subscribe to For the Love of Health on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and follow ChristianaCare on social media. Just search at ChristianaCare.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with another great conversation.
Until then, thanks for joining us
for the love of health.